Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for January 1st, 2013. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Arthur Weiss and Jayajit Das about the role of SRC and SYK family kinases in B-cell receptor signaling. B-cells are a subtype of lymphocyte that function in the adaptive immune system. On their surface, each B-cell has a unique version of the B-cell receptor that recognizes a particular antigen. And binding of antigen to the B-cell receptor activates the B-cell. Once a B-cell is activated, it proliferates, and its progeny can differentiate into two different cell types. One type is an antibody-secreting B-cell, which produces the antibodies that fight the infection, and these cells are fairly short-lived. The progeny could also differentiate into memory B-cells, which are long-lived, and they produce lasting immunity against the antigen. Signaling by the B-cell receptor requires two different types of downstream kinases, a member of the SRC family and a member of the SYK family. These kinases have partially redundant functions, and so it's been unclear why both are required for B-cell receptor signaling. A group led by Art Weiss and Jayajit Das has addressed the requirement for these two types of kinases in a paper that appears in the current issue of Science Signaling. Weiss spoke to me by telephone from the University of California, San Francisco, and Das from the Ohio State University in Columbus. Welcome, Dr. Das and Dr. Weiss.
Thank you.
The first question I'll address to you, Art. The SRC and the SYK family kinases are important for signaling downstream of the B-cell receptor. What's the sequence of phosphorylation events that are catalyzed downstream of activation of the B-cell receptor?
Well, first, let me just indicate that the B-cell receptor is representative of many receptors in the immune system that are involved in antigen recognition. And these receptors separate their ligand-binding subunits from their signal-transducing subunits. So the B-cell receptor uses a membrane form of immunoglobulin to recognize its ligand, in this case antigen, but associated with it and associated with other ligand-binding subunits in other hematopoietic cells involved in antigen recognition are invariant subunits that contain a sequence motif that we refer to as ITAM. The ITAM motif stands for immunoreceptor tyrosine-based activation motif, and it contains two tyrosine residues that are spaced by about 10 amino acids from each other. So SRC family kinases initiate signaling by phosphorylating these tyrosines in the ITAM residues. And if both tyrosines are phosphorylated, they recruit SYK kinases via their two tandem SH2 domains with relatively high affinity and specificity. The SRC kinases initiate signaling, and this is followed by the SYK kinases.
The SRC and the SYK kinases have partially redundant functions. How do the functions of these kinases overlap?
Well, it turns out that SYK kinases, or SYK in particular, can phosphorylate ITAM motifs, but they don't do so as efficiently as SRC kinases.
If SYK can phosphorylate the ITAM, albeit less efficiently than SRC kinases can, do you really need the SRC family kinases?
Well, in fact, genetic experiments and inhibitor studies demonstrate that you don't absolutely need SRC kinases, but these genetic and inhibitor studies have suggested that in the absence of SRC kinase function, signaling is less efficient. That is, it needs higher concentrations of antigen to initiate signaling, and the signaling response is delayed somewhat, and that actually inspired the hypothesis for these studies.
And that hypothesis was?
Well, the idea was that the delay in responsiveness suggested that perhaps some event was occurring between the addition of ligand and the response, and we, Jayajit and I, considered the possibility that receptor clustering or receptor oligomerization was induced, and this might be required for SYK kinase to effectively phosphorylate ITAMs and be recruited to ITAMs via a positive feedback loop.
Why did you choose a computational approach to address the question?
Well, I thought it would be difficult to actually prove the hypothesis. I thought we needed some clues about key experiments that could inform us about the method. In addition, it was a little bit hard to conceive of experiments that could really tell us whether positive feedback was important. And so Jaid and I discussed the problem, and he took over.
So essentially, you use the computational modeling to suggest experiments.
Right.
Jaid, you built the mathematical model to explore the difference between these kinases in mediating signaling by the monomeric versus the multimeric B cell receptors. What did that model predict?
So the mathematical model predicted when BCRs are allowed to form clusters or multimers, SYK is able to phosphorylate the BCR-associated items efficiently. Therefore, in the absence of SFKs or SERC family kinases, item activation will be reduced only by a small amount, although the kinetics of item activation will be a bit delayed. In contrast, when BCRs signal as monomers, SYK is not very efficient in mediating item phosphorylation. Thus, in the absence of SFKs, item activation will be reduced by a large amount. These predictions were supported by experiments with B cells stimulated by soluble monomeric and multimeric ligands in the presence or absence of SERC and SYK inhibitors. The mathematical model also provided a mechanistic understanding regarding the predictions. For example, why SYK is an efficient kinase for item phosphorylation only in the presence of BCR clustering? And this is because SYK becomes catalytically active by binding to phosphorylated items. In the presence of BCR multimers, SYK molecules recruited by phosphorylated items of a BCR can phosphorylate neighboring items. And those phospho items, in turn, would recruit a greater number of SYK molecules. And those SYK molecules would then activate more items in the vicinity. This produces a positive feedback and makes SYK an efficient kinase for item activation in the presence of BCR multimers. In the case of BCR monomers, the recruited SYK molecules have access to only a small number of items in the vicinity. Therefore, the positive feedback is not implied, which makes SYK an inefficient kinase for item phosphorylation. And that's how we get the prediction, which was tested in our experiment.
So essentially, SERC kinases aren't necessarily required for signaling as long as the signaling is in the context in which the B cell receptors are clustering.
Right. In the absence of SERC kinases, in that case, you get enough item activation, but the kinetics is slowed down. It takes a while to produce item activation.
But the presence of a SARC family kinase is absolutely required for signaling through monomeric B cell receptors.
Correct.
So why would the system evolve to operate that way? I mean, what's the advantage to having two different ways of essentially activating the same pathway?
Well, if you think about what B cells actually have to do, which is to protect us from pathogens, most pathogens have polymeric antigens on their surfaces, if you think about viruses or bacteria. These kinds of antigens are naturally well-suited to clustering receptors. So you don't need SARC kinases so much to recognize such polymeric antigens. However, these pathogens also secrete toxins or other products, and these tend to be monovalent. And so the system may have evolved to protect us from pathogen products. Things like tetanus toxin, for instance, might be a less than multivalent antigen. So essentially, SARC kinases then increase the sensitivity of the receptor in order to recognize antigens that might simply be products of pathogens that could, in fact, still do harm.
The SRC and SYK kinases are also required in T cells for signaling downstream of the T cell receptor. How do their functions in B cell receptor signaling differ from the functions of these kinases in T cell receptor signaling?
Well, T cells have a different SYK kinase. So T cells have acquired a kinase called ZAP70, which is structurally quite similar to SYK kinase, but it's under much more control. It's much more strongly auto-inhibited, and it, unlike SYK, is not auto-activated, and it can't phosphorylate ITAMs. It requires SRC kinases to do so. Now, T cells have different SRC kinases. In particular, T cells have a SRC kinase called LCK, which associates with highly specialized co-receptors called CD4 or CD8. And CD4 and CD8 have evolved to cluster with the T cell receptor during antigen recognition. Now, T cells don't recognize the same kinds of antigens that B cells recognize. T cells recognize peptide fragments of proteins that are bound to major histocompatibility complex molecules on antigen-presenting cells, for instance. So these peptide fragments bound to MHC complexes are recognized by the T cell receptor and the co-receptor, CD4 or CD8, at the same time. And what this serves to accomplish is to ensure that the right co-receptor and right function of the T cell is coupled to the right kind of MHC recognition. For instance, CD4 co-receptors recognize class 2 major histocompatibility complexes, and these molecules have evolved to present antigens mainly from extracellular pathogens like fungi or bacteria that might be taken up via an endocytic pathway, whereas CD8 T cells use a different co-receptor, CD8, in order to recognize class 1 MHC molecules, which present peptides derived from the endogenous biosynthetic pathway, which might then allow CD8 T cells to see peptide fragments derived from intracellular pathogens like viruses. What this essentially does is it couples these two lineages of T cells via their specific antigen recognition properties to specific functions. CD4 T cells are helper cells. They produce cytokines that will enable antigen-presenting cells to either produce antibodies or to produce reactive oxygen species that will kill pathogens that have been taken up via the endocytic pathway or phagocytosis, whereas CD8 T cells generally have cytolytic machinery to kill virally infected cells, and so they use a different co-receptor that's well-suited for recognizing antigenic peptides that are delivered via class 1 molecules to the cell surface.
The modeling predicted and the experimental results indicated that the SRC family kinases are absolutely required for signaling through monomeric B-cell receptors, and so they increase the sensitivity of the system. And so how does knowing that inform how we understand how B cells respond to antigen?
Well, I think one of the questions we're frequently asked is why is the system so complex? Growth factor receptors and other tyrosine kinase receptors don't require this tandem of kinases. And I think the system probably at some point didn't have two kinases involved in recognizing antigen, but there was a need for increasing the sensitivity and speed at which antigen recognition could occur as pathogens perhaps got more sophisticated and made soluble products that we needed to respond to. Hence, our kinases perhaps increase the speed and sensitivity of an immune response. And in fact, speed is actually quite important in antigen recognition, because if an antigen doesn't present a high enough affinity ligand for the B cell receptor, by the time the antigen receptors have clustered, the antigen may have fallen off. So I think increasing sensitivity and increasing speed was critically important for us to survive the various tricks that pathogens play on us.
Well, thanks for talking to me, Dr. Weiss and Dr. Das.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
That was Arthur Weiss and Jayajit Das, senior authors of a paper that appears in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Mukherjee and colleagues, and it's titled Monovalent and Multivalent Ligation of the B-Cell Receptor Exhibit Differential Dependence Upon SYK and SARC Kinases. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.